Conversation number 8 with Miss Gibb of the Grove Lazare, held on the 23rd of May 1973, tape number 7. Miss Gibb, we've had such a long talk about so many subjects that possibly this afternoon, if you don't mind, it will be a question of asking you about a number of subjects which we don't seem to have touched upon and which, if you know anything about them, would be most interesting. Yes. The first one that I wonder if you can throw any light upon is the old windmill at the corner of Jerby Road and Ash Grove.
Well, it really is not so very old. My aunt remembered it being built. A Mr. Monk came over with his family, and they... Now, his eldest daughter, her mother died, I think, when she was born, and she had a very good income of her own, and she lived on her own in Ballaclone, which was a children's home. She left it as a children's home for the children of unmarried mothers in the island. Mm. And Mr. Monk thought that it was a pity there was no mill grinding, making flour nearer than Laxey or Sulby. And so he built the red mill, and he built what was the vicarage, for that was the house the monks lived in, and ran it. But after he died, I think his sons all went away, and I know his eldest daughter became of the London Hospital.
Matron?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because long after the family had gone from here, my old aunt kept in touch with Katie Monk, as she called her, mm-hmm. and she was matron of the London Hospital. And one of the sons, I don't know where he was or what he did, but years afterwards, he and some of his family were back, and I remember they were at Ballacollingan, and I happened to go there. I've forgotten, I suppose I'd been asked to go and have tea. I was only a school, I don't think I was going to. I think we had a governess at that time. I must have been about 10 or 11. And Mrs. Farron called to me and said, I want you to come here, Janet. This man knew your father very well, and I want you to come and say how do you do to him. So I did.
And this was Mr. Monk.
And I remember that. Mm. And that I know he was Arthur Monk. Later on, after Mr. Monk died, Ernest Tellison bought it and turned the what had been store places and so on into a dwelling house, you see, and he lived there. And then when he died, his son and Molly Tellison and Addie.
What sort of date was that, when Ernest Tellison moved in? 1900 or after 1900 or before 1900?
No, after. I think it. I wonder if he died before 1900. No, because his wife died first. Yes, I think it was before 1900.
Before 1900.
I think his wife died somewhere in... No, I'm wrong. His wife died somewhere in the 1920s. 1922 or 1923. And he lived there afterwards for another, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Molly and Eddie were there. And he died and they all went away because the Tellisons and the Montagues were both in Yorkshire. And I think they went to the Montagues for a time, and then to their aunt in London.
Well, my next question is rather similar. Dog Mills. Was it called, or is it called Dog Mills because there was a mill that had something to do with dogs, or what do you know about Dog Mills?
Well, that's always a sort of vexed question. Some people said... Oh, some people came in here the other day and said something about dogs in a pool. And I said, I don't think it had anything to do with that. I think it's the corruption of some other Manx name. And that at some time or other, there was a sort of river that came down. Well, I think it's still a small river that comes down there. And it had something to do with that, but I think it's the corruption of another name, of some other Manx word, I mean. I think Johnny ought to know something about that. He's keen on Manx and words.
Mm-hmm. So that, in short, you believe that Dog Mills, there was no mill there, nothing to do with dogs, and that it is the modern corruption of some rather similar sounding Manx phrase.
Yes, I do.
And to ask John Trellin. Mm. Well, then the next question, Ormley Hall, somebody told me that Mr. Peyton built it, right, and lived there, and then at some later date it was a bakery.
Yes.
Run by a Mr. Corlett.
Edward Quayle, the baker.
Edward Quayle.
Yes.
And what date did it become a bakery?
Oh, well...
And, you know, I mean, who was Edward Quayle and why?
Well, now, wait a minute.
Was it in...
Well, dear me, the Burleys had lived there, the Mannix had lived there. Dear me, now, how would I... And then the Mannix bought St. Trinian's and sold it. I can't tell you. It was sometime in the 1860s that the Peytons were living, the old Mr. Peyton was living there. And I've forgotten the name of the people who bought it when he died, and his widow went to live with her daughter in London, who was a Mrs. What was her name? Mrs. Gardner. I've forgotten their name, and then the Burleys bought it and lived there for a good many years. And Mr. Burley was drowned in the harbour here, and they went away, and the Mannix bought it. And then Mr. Mannix bought St. Trinian's and sold that to people who came over, but not people that we knew. Sold it to Edward Quayle, of course. And it was he sold it to when he died, it was sold to English people.
I see. So, was the sale to Edward Quayle in your lifetime?
Yes. He They had a baker's shop where the butcher's shop is at the bridge.
Oh, yes. Now. Tears the butcher.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was the baker's. And I've forgotten where they lived before, but anyhow, he'd done very well as a baker, and he drove one of those box-like high vans, you know, that the driver sat up on the top and the doors opened at the back and steaming bread inside. Mm-hmm. And then he damaged his leg in some way, and I think he had an artificial leg latterly, I'm not very sure. But he turned the coach house into a bakehouse, and they lived there. And he had quite a biggish family. But I think the two elder sons went abroad, and the eldest daughter died some time ago, and the second daughter became a nurse and worked in Liverpool, I think, for years, and then came back here, married somebody. They lived in Mochel, I think, and she died here. And the youngest one married a doctor. She also had become a nurse and was in Manchester. And the next youngest, a fair girl, I remember seeing her. Sometimes she was here part of the war. Then she went away again. I've lost touch with them since.
And
the one boy that was here died quite young, as a young man, but comparatively young. I don't think he could have been more than 30 odd. And I think his little son died too.
And when did Quayle finish doing baking at Ormley Hall?
Well, I wouldn't like to say, but it was when Edward Quayle died they gave up baking.
Was this after the First World War, for instance?
Yes.
Yeah, after the First World War.
After, sometime after.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, another question of interest to me. You were talking about when your grandfather first came and he found he found Poplar Grove here, and how there were very, very few buildings north of the river here.
Yes.
What do you know about Bolivia Mount? When was that built? And
well, it was built by Jack Tier when he came home from South America, or wherever Bolivia is.
Yes.
And I don't think it could have been built by Jack. I think it must have been built by his father, because I think Jack went to Australia, and his wife, who'd been a Marion Smith, I think, yes, and the daughters and the son came here and were here a whole summer at one time. And I think they're all gone now. I remember the. There was a connect. The wife was a connection of the Cruikshanks.
What? The
High Bailiff, at least
High Bailiff Cruikshanks.
Yes, really a connection of Mrs. Cruikshanks. Her mother, old Mrs. Tulloch, had been a Miss Smith, and Jack's mother, I think, was a Miss Smith.
But now,
and
did the Tier, Jack or his father, who built the present house, and who called it Bolivia Mount.
Yes.
Did they build on top of a farmhouse, do you suppose?
No.
It was...
No, it was...
A brand new house.
A field.
It was a field.
Yes.
And it was a brand new house.
Yes.
And what sort of date?
Well, I don't remember it being built, of course, so that it was...
It was before your time.
Yes.
But it was after, this.
Yes. Oh, yes, after this. Auntie remembered it being
your
built.
Your aunt remembers it being built.
Yes. And Auntie was born in what?
Well,
18... Auntie was born, I think, in 1834. Yes, 1834.
So it was probably built round about the same time as Ormley Hall was
yes.
built.
Yes, very much about
1850,
that.
1860.
Yes.
And this tier had been in South America and made some money there.
Yes.
mm-hmm.
And then you see the son went to Australia and he'd married apparently before he went there because, of course, his wife wasn't Australian.
Miss Killip wanted me to ask.
Yes.
Was what do you know about the Quail Hall near the electric railway station?
Oh, well, now, who could tell you more about that, I wonder? It was built as a kind of mission house before I think, the Wesleyan Chapel was built. And was used for Sunday schools and services and things of that kind.
In that case, it's quite old, because the Wesleyan Chapel was around 1848.
Yes. Well, I think it was the forerunner, I thought, of as a meeting house for some of these.
Nonconformists.
Yes.
I see. And yet another one that she asked about. Do you know anything about Caledonia Lodge at Markeld?
No, I don't.
Whereabouts was it and what was it?
Yes, no, I don't.
Never heard of it?
No. The old.
I've never heard of it. On a rather different subject, I see I've got here
yes.
The word Manx hens, rumpies. Did you have rumpies here?
I think we once had one rumpy hen that somebody gave us many years ago, but I've seen both hens and cocks without tails. Must have been about 1893 or 1894 that there was a rumpy hen and cock. And somebody gave them to Granny, I think, because they were such a curiosity.
You don't suppose that your hen book has a Manx rumpy in it, do you?
No, I'm sure it hasn't.
It's, what a pity.
Yes, isn't it?
What a pity. And when they had chicks, did the chicks just come normally with normal tails?
Well, I suppose so. Mm.
These were just a sort of an occasional curiosity.
Yes.
Like
black. I don't remember any rumpy chickens being produced from these.
Yeah.
But be like the Luxon sheep.
That you can breed Luxon sheep.
Yes,
can't you?
Yes, you could. Mrs. Lassells was frightfully keen about them, and John let her graze them in the lily field in front of the house. But what became of them when Mrs. Lassells died, I don't know. John may know.
There's quite a big movement for the revival of the herd now.
Yes.
There's a Major MacDonald or Major McGregor,
oh, yes,
I think.
Oh, yes, is he interested?
Yeah, yeah, he's doing something about it. And then, of course, the museum has them at Craignish too.
Yes. But they were... Mrs. Lassells had, I don't know how many of them, but they were very flourishing. Hers seemed to be, anyway.
One other question that Ms. Killip asked, we have rarely dealt with, but it was very interesting that she should ask it. She said, I live in Lonnon. And she said, how did Gibbs get interested in Lonnon, and are they the same family? Because she said there was a Duncan Gibb owned Baljane farm. And well, of course, we've talked about this,
yes,
and we know. And but I mean, why?
Grandpapa bought Baljane farm, I believe, at the same time or soon after he bought this place.
He was putting his money in,
where he could dot it. He fancied it, I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And for years and years and years, of course, that they owned it and it was let. And there was a man, a very nice man named Cowley, who was there for very many years. And then finally he got too old to farm. And I think people were imposing on him rather. And he gave up, and I think that was when Will took over the management of it, and he got a tenant, and quite a good man, but I think they rather played on Will, and in the end the tenant left, and Will took over the farm himself, and he... Olive wouldn't go and live there. She said, an awful place to go and live. It's up on the hill, you see, above. And so he decided to sell it. And Parsons bought it from him. And Parsons said to him, do you think you're asking enough for this land? And Will said, I don't want to be greedy. And I wish to have pleasant relations with whoever I sell it to, because I don't like selling it. And I want to be able to come and walk here and walk the hills when I feel inclined. And Mr. Parsons laughed and he said, well, you know you're welcome to come any time.
Mm.
And he said, you know, I have always just dealt in sheep. All my people in Cumberland or Northumberland, whichever it was he came from, just sheep. And Will said, well, I think if you run cattle with them, as I have done, you'll find it's very profitable. Will was just really beginning to make a very good thing out of it. But Olive didn't want to leave Port Erin. And he said Duncan was getting to the age when he needed more than a father just at weekends. And so he said, tenants aren't satisfactory on a farm like this. And so he sold it.
So Will's sale of Baljane was what, after World War II?
Yes.
In the 1950s sometime?
Yes.
I mean, what we would call comparatively recently.
Oh, yes, quite comparatively recently.
Yeah.
But Will, of course, was my brother.
Yes, surely.
And he used to go up there Oh, he lived there half the week, you see, and used to go home, back to Portier on at weekends. And when Duncan was small and not going to school, he used to take Duncan with him. But once Duncan started going to school, and then, it sounds funny now, Olive didn't like little boys. She was awfully disappointed Duncan wasn't another girl. And all the misdeeds and the mischief that the two got into, Sally and he was always blamed for it. I was often sorry for that child. And he was always punished by her. But Will decided that it wasn't in the boy's interest for him to be away all week. And so he said once Duncan was really going to school, he sold the farm and stayed at home. I think he had a small farm up on the way to the Druid Circle, somewhere there, that he was interested in. It was one of Uncle Edward's. And he had an interest in that. I mean, it was an interest for him.
Yeah.
And he had a boat. And they got along very happily. Mm. And he went to Shetland at intervals to see his friends there.
Yeah.
Liam. R.E. Allen.
Yeah.
And he was killed in the First World War.
And he was what, an advocate?
Well, perhaps he was fully fledged at that time. He hoped to be an advocate. He was, his father was the Allen of Allen and Todman.
Oh, yes.
And their people were vicars of Mochald for I've forgotten how many generations. But Mr. Allen, when he grew up, money was very short, and he decided that he would go into trade and make money. And Dan Goldsmith was just retiring, having built Riversdale, and Tom Allen and this Mr. Todman, I don't know where Mr. Todman came from, but I think from somewhere in Douglas, they decided to take over the business, which was so flourishing, which they did. And my grandfather, of course, dealt with Dan Goldsmith, yeah, and continued to deal with Allen and, yes, Todman.
And this Elliot Allen, then, was this Allen's son, was he?
Yes. And his brother, Jack Allen, is living at the Mitre now and busy writing up the family history.
And
they were vicars of Mochald, oh, I don't know how many generations, yes, having been elsewhere first, of course.
Yeah. And the Bellevue. In my notes, yeah?
Well, Bellevue, I can't remember the name of the person who built it, but whoever he was, he didn't live very long.
And where is it?
And an old friend of my grandfather, Gibb, Captain Williamson, bought it, and he and his wife came to live there, and eventually their niece, Mrs. Williamson's niece, Miss Adair, yes, mm-hmm, came to live with them and take care of the old couple, mm-hmm, and he died and she died eventually. Mm-hmm. I don't remember her. I do remember being taken up there to see her and nearly falling out of the pony carriage on the way up and Aunt Mary catching me by the petticoats.
Where is Bellevue?
I was about two, I think.
Where is Bellevue?
on the road to Muckle Church, you go up and then down the hill into that dip by Port Lake there, yeah, Port of Ullen.
Yeah.
And they call it Roselands now.
Oh, I see. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, right. And so that my note here that says, could have been as Percy Cowley,
yes.
I suppose whoever was talking about,
yes,
about Elliot Allen was really saying that he was a very brilliant young man.
Yes.
And that had he lived and not been killed in the First War,
yes,
he would have gone through to be Deemster and all the lot.
Yes, very probably would have done.
Yeah.
I tell you who knew him very well in those young days, they're both young, and that's Lady Cowley.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, right, there you are. See, I mean, Percy Cowley's widow.
Yes.
Mm.
And of course, you know, the children are not hers. Percy was married twice. His first wife was a charming Irish girl. They lived in Ramsey then. We saw a great deal of her. In fact, I'm godmother to the eldest child.
Oh.
And she died. In a way, it was rather tragic because she seemed to have recovered from the birth of a baby that was born dead and then quite suddenly collapsed and died.
This is your goddaughter or the mother?
Goddaughter's mother, yeah, yes. Percy's first wife.
Yeah.
And Lady Cowley said to someone, talking about things the other day, well, you know, she said, when I was young, I thought it'd be awfully nice if I married a widower with children. Didn't want to have children, but I liked children. And I thought if I married a widower with children, it would be a great thing. And she did, of course.
Mm, mm.
A girl and two boys.
Mm. My other rather strange question is, ask about Willie Hardy Neal and W.K. Corlett, who farmed at Regaby, something to do with the Goldsmith estate. Does this make sense to you?
William Hardy Neal's wife.
Is William Hardy Neal anything to do with the Dolly Neal family?
With
the Dolly Neal's family.
Yeah. Yes, distantly.
I see.
But not very near.
Mm-hmm.
He was a brother of Rector Neal, who was Rector of Balaff.
Yeah.
And at one time was the headmaster of Ramsey Grammar School.
What, his brother? Or William Hardy?
Mm.
The brother, what, Rector Neal or
yes.
William Hardy?
Rector Neal.
Was master at Ramsey
Grammar School. Yes.
Yeah.
William Hardy married a Miss Corlett, who was the daughter of, now am I getting mixed? No, I think I'm right. The daughter of the old Vicar General of Loch Nyai. Mm. And they had no children. And of course, Thomas Arthur Corlett. Was her nephew, yes, that was it. Thomas Arthur's father, also Thomas Arthur of Loch Nyai, was and Mrs. Hardy Neal were brother and sister. And she married this man, Hardy Neal. I think, but I may be wrong in that, I think she was a widow. I think she she first marry Harry Goldsmith? And he went off with somebody else. Anyhow, latterly, I know when I knew her, she lived at Regaby, in the farm that Ernie Christian lives in now. Very nice house. It is. Better than the ordinary farmhouse.
This is the woman who became Mrs. Neal. So that this business about Willie Hardy Neal farming at Regaby is correct.
Yes, quite.
And this was apparently the Goldsmith estate at one time.
Yes.
I mean, what is Goldsmith doing with land out there?
Yes.
What, just buying it, putting his money in, putting the Bombay duck?
I don't know how he came to have it. He may have inherited it from a previous. Because I've an idea that at one time he had what is now Lay's shop in Ramsey.
What, Goldsmith did?
That William Hardy Neal had.
Oh, William Hardy Neal had Lay's
yes.
shop.
No, Goldsmith had Allen and Tubman's.
Yes. So that the W.K. Corlett, who was supposed to have farmed with Willie Hardy Neal
yes.
at Regaby,
yes.
and he may be what, all mixed up with the wife, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a bit complicated.
Mm.
Miss Killip also wondered whether you could add to your recollections about Old Manx customs and superstitions, for instance. Now, let's take superstitions first. Did you have superstitions that as girls you stuck to at the Grove here, lucky things and unlucky things? And
oh, yes, in various sorts of ways. And even
I'm talking of Manx ones, you know.
Yes.
I mean, especially Manx ones. Like not having daffodils in the house in
yes,
case.
Yes, well, of course, never. As long as we had geese and were setting the eggs, we never had daffodils in the house. Not the double narcissi, yes, but not the fat double daffodils, never. And at the Quines, at Bride, my Mrs. Kisick's father, no daffodils are allowed in the house.
At any time?
No. It's not lucky. There'll be never any. And fun, they haven't had daffodils in the house. But the curious thing is that this year, Argus laid comparatively early, and their goose wasn't laying. I think she has two geese, Francis' sister. And I said, well, I'm not going to have any goslings here. Will you ask Mildred, would she like the eggs? Would she care to have them? Has she got a clucky hen? So Francis always goes home at the weekend to see them. And she came back on the Monday and said, Mildred's got two clucky hens. She'd be very glad of the eggs. So we sent three or four eggs, whatever there were, out to Mildred. And a little later, there were another three eggs. And I said, do you think she's got another hen? Are her geese laying yet? No, they weren't laying. Yes, she had another hen. So they went out. Then her geese laid and sat. She's got five lovely goslings from the eggs I sent out to her. But there wasn't a gosling. The eggs her geese sat on were all rotten. And so I thought they had arranged, I think, to come in today. They're going to take my gander out and bring theirs in as company for Judy. And they're going to take Dandy out and put him with her two geese and see if the second lay will be any better than the first.
You are in a complicated...
Yes. Yes, and then there was another thing when they came in, those people, Vivian McPherson, I don't know what her husband's name is, and the doctor, and they were going out. I said, I'm sorry, you came in the back way and you must go out the back way. I can't allow you to go out at the front door. It's the first time you've been in the house and you mustn't go through it and take the luck with you. So that was another superstition.
And this you always stick to.
And though. So they all went out that way.
It's the first time in, is it?
Yes.
I mean, I could go out. I could go out.
You could come in and go out
any
as
door
you
I
pleased,
like.
You
yes.
see.
But the first
but
time.
But the first time, you must not go through the house. You must go out by the door you came in.
I see. And can you cast any rational reason on the daffodil and the sterile geese?
No, I can't really, except that I suppose in the old days the wild daffies came out and someone brought them in and the eggs were rotten. Just And as Francis said, and the eggs were all rotten and they didn't have any daffodils in the house.
Strange. And what other sort of superstitions of that sort did you have and do you still stick to?
Well, it's hard to think of them when you sort of sit down like
to,
that. You come across them at times, you know, when you're doing something and think, oh dear.
But you know, sort of peculiarly Manx ones.
Yes.
You know, if you think of any, just jot them
down.
Oh,
yes, think of any.
And then another thing, travelling beggars.
Travelling beggars, yes. Mm. We used to have such a lot.
Were they Manx or were they Scottish, what did they call those people?
Quite the tinkers.
Scots. Yes. Sorry.
No, they were mostly, they were generally perhaps a couple of men or man and wife or something. People who'd been in jail and let out, you see, time was up. They perhaps weren't in for anything very serious. And then they go around begging and sometimes didn't want a job, preferred to beg. We used to be terribly bothered with a couple that came until we had a small fox terrier, and he was a very good watchdog. And I heard an awful row one day, and I went out to see. And Rian was at those second gates, but they were shut, and he couldn't get through. And a man and a woman were standing the other side. And I said, is there anything you want? Yes, we wanted something to eat or some money. Well, I said, you better go. Will he bite? Oh, I said, yes. Don't please come through because he'll nip your ankles as quickly as he'll do anything else. He was a sturdy little person and a very good watch. So I said, I'm sorry, I have nothing in my pocket. If shilling's any good to you, I know where I can get a shilling easily. So I brought out 2 shillings and gave them to them and said, now don't come back again if you value your skin. And they never did. Or if they did, Rian sent them off.
How do you spell Rian?
It was Marian King gave him to me, and it was the end of her name, R-I-A-N.
I see. And did you have what we used to have when I was a child, these sort of travelling bagmen selling cotton, reels of cotton and buttons and...
Yes, all sorts of things, small things like that.
Yes, carrying a sort of leather hold-all,
yes,
with all sorts of domestic needles.
Yes, yes, they did, there was. And there was also a travelling man who came round from Ireland with all kinds of linen tea towels and nice pocket handkerchiefs and... I've forgotten his name. Granny liked this man so much and always got something from him and would tell him what she wanted when he came the next time.
Mm-hmm. And another of Miss Killip's things is the mummers, the white boys at Christmas.
And I suppose Mr. Stoyle is still alive. Mr. Stoyle worked that up and got all the proper rhyme and the whole thing. It really was quite...